Welcome to the BCS Tech Podcast. My name is Scott Webb. I am the instructional technology coordinator for Bradley County Schools. Thanks for joining us here on our podcast, our first initial podcast that we'll be doing. And we're going to take a look at a lot of different things. We're not going to look just at technology and education. We're going to look at a variety of topics. And I'm happy to have with us tonight as we look at some leadership items, as we have former principal of Valley View Elementary and current Ocoee Middle School principal, Mr. Corey Lindberg. Corey, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great, Scott. Thanks for having me.
You had big shoes to fill down there at Ocoee Middle School, didn't you?
Yeah, really, really did. Blessing to take over for Ron Spangler, who really just did some phenomenal things with the kids and the students there at Ocoee Middle School. So it's been a blessing for sure.
Yeah, he's hopefully we're going to have him on the podcast here in a couple weeks and get his perspective on things. Now that he's retired and out there on the golf course, he's had plenty of time to come up with some cool stories. And we look forward to talking to Ron. And Corey is one of my favorite people, not only because he does an incredible job, but he is the only person I know that's ever stepped foot on Pebble Beach. So that's a big deal, buddy.
Well, I appreciate you. I was blessed to play there one time. I wish it wasn't quite as cost prohibitive.
No, it was a little closer to home. I understand that.
You know, but it's a beautiful place for sure. I didn't play well, but hey,
I would have been taking pictures. I wouldn't have been worried about the golf. I just would have been like my first experience at Augusta when I walked out there. I was just so nervous. I couldn't do anything but just grin. But Corey does, Corey does a terrific job. I was very impressed with, in my new role. I've been in this role about 15 months. I was impressed with what was taking place at Valley View and what he was able to do there. And Corey, it looks like you've taken a lot of that kind of philosophy that you had at Valley View and brought it to Ocoee Middle.
Well, I hope so. I mean, you know, people really don't change. Find that, you know, students, they all have the same heart inside of them, and passionate teachers are great. We have them all across our county, and it's been a blessing for sure, but it's a learning process at the same time. But yeah, hopefully we can, I'll be able to kind of take my style and be able to help Ocoee Middle, you know, capitalize on the already great things that are going on out there.
Well, talking about your style, you know, tonight's mm-hmm. podcast, I guess we're focusing on leadership. You know, how would you describe your leadership style?
I would probably, if I were to describe my leadership style, I'd have to say it's probably leans toward the collaborative nature. You know, I'm a firm believer in finding the positive things about every person, every student in our building, and I feel like, you know, as a collaborative leader, I'm always looking for the team as a whole to, you know, to fit the educational needs of the kids. And so, you know, in saying that, it's easier to say than to do, but really I try to just value the positives of every single person in the building. I mean, you and I have our faults. Every teacher has
absolutely
their faults. But what I try to do as a leadership style is to capitalize on the teacher's strengths, and really not necessarily me capitalize on them, but put them in a position where they can be successful and really just act as a support system, you know, for them. And so I would say collaborative, because I don't make a lot of autonomous decisions and that sort of thing.
No, and it's in your role and in a role like mine, it's important that we find those strengths and put people in a place where they can have success.
Yeah, that's been an important part, I think, you know, in just my few number of years that I've been an administrator. I think that's been an advantage to the teachers, that we can find those strengths and not necessarily spend a ton of time talking about what they're not good at, but really just taking those teachers who have, you know, strengths and talents in technology or in teaching a certain subject or the way they communicate with kids, and making sure that they're in a subject and grade level where they can capitalize on those. So that's probably how I would describe my style.
Well, now I'm going to come back and we're going to hit some heavy topics here. All right. You know, obviously No Child Left Behind really kind of changed the landscape in education. You know, did you think it hurt education, or just kind of give me your take on how that has kind of changed the dynamic in education?
So I think No Child Left Behind did some positive things for us in education. I also think that it had some negative consequences. And I think that, you know, some of the positives, I'll start with the positives. I think the positive things that No Child Left Behind did was it did put an increased emphasis on student data. I think it helped bring an intense focus to teacher training, teacher education programs. I think it put a seriousness and a business side to the teaching profession that we do need a little bit of. You know, I feel like it's important that we make sure that we take the business of student success academically, we take that very seriously. Mm-hmm. And so I think it did bring that. I think it brought about some training opportunities for teachers. I think that's about the time that micro-credentials were really born for educators. And so there are some things from, you know, whether those were intended consequences or not, I think those have been some positive things that have come out of No Child Left Behind. I do think it's hurt in a few ways to where it put a lot of teacher accountability. It put a heavy load of that on student outcomes. And so there are things that teachers can and cannot control. And it seemed like some of the legislation that came down with No Child Left Behind really didn't take into account different subgroups of students.
Right.
And the challenges that come with socioeconomically challenged students, or, you know, students in poverty or students from certain types of backgrounds. And it seems like to me that it didn't take into account a lot of those things. And I feel like the positive side of the business side of school, well, it also brings the negative side to where we started seeing teachers losing jobs. We started seeing teacher shortages. We started seeing schools being shut down. And so there were some negative consequences to the fact that people were afraid to teach, that people saw teaching more as a business and not as a relationship strategy. And so I do think it helped and hurt. And I know that's a very politically correct answer.
No, you go right ahead and ride the fence there, buddy.
Yeah, well, that's really where I am, because I do see positives and negatives.
No.
I do think it's hurt in the long run, but I think some positives did come out of it as well.
Well, and I don't think a lot of people look at it from that perspective, because it did change the way, you know, evaluations and things like that. And it's great that we are able now to give more. I think, at least for me, and this is going back a couple of years when I was getting evaluated as a teacher, the feedback, the amount of the mentoring side of what a principal teacher, that role should be, I think that kind of has been one of the things that have kind of spawned out of that legislation, is that it feels more meaningful now to me, the evaluation process, than it ever has.
Yes, I do think in that sense, it's given us a platform to have open conversation about our teaching practices. I think it's spurred the opening of classroom doors, per se, where, you know, teachers are collaborating. They saw the need to get out of the shell to a degree and collaborate. And so I think that was a positive thing that came out of it, for sure.
What are some of the things that are going on in education that really get you excited right now? What are you seeing?
So in the circles, I guess, that I run in, and particularly in Brazos County schools, where, you know, where you and I mean, this is our life. And so the things that I see are an intense focus on relationships. I think right now we are doing a fabulous job of balancing student data, teacher evaluation data, and balancing that with, listen, we've got to engage kids in meaningful relationships and give them a hope outside of the home to let somebody else invest in that child. you know, there's research out there I read recently where, you know, really kids value more the opinion of a classroom teacher than they do their parents, you know, and so to me, it just shows the importance of a teacher. I'm really excited about the intense focus on relationships and building those meaningful ties with a kid. So that's probably the most exciting thing, I think. The second probably most exciting thing, I'm not saying this because of your position.
I was sitting here wondering when we're going to get to some technology talk, but go right ahead.
I mean, that's really exciting, you know, for me from a technology standpoint. I would not call myself a technology guru. You know, I like to mess around with it, and I'm kind of ankle deep in lots of different pieces of technology. But I love the move to collaborative classrooms using social media, using networks to be able to collaborate student to student, student to teacher. I mean, practical things like Google Classroom.
Right.
I mean, simple things like the Google Calendar has transformed our administrative team and the way we communicate at Ocoee Middle School. Simple things like that. I love the movement. I think it makes teaching more efficient. I think it will save us money in the long run. And obviously, sustaining technology, you know, is different than sustaining paper goods and hardback textbooks. And so, you know, I'm really excited about the movement toward technology. So if I were to say two things I'm really excited about, focus on relationships, and then the really efficient use of technology in the classroom.
Well, and to kind of combine those two, I mean, you do a fabulous job. I know last year you did a little newsletter to various mm-hmm. people of your community. So you're using technology mm-hmm. to boost that relationship piece.
Yeah, that's really, you know, if you ask any teacher what they want what do you need from an administrator, I would guess, and this would be an interesting guess thing to serve, but if you just ask them, hey, what do you need from your administrator? One of the first things is going to be communication out of their mouth. They want that. You and I wanted that from our previous principals. People want that from us. And so it just makes it so easy to communicate. You're not handwriting a memo. You're not typing something out on the typewriter. It's as simple as sharing it in a Google Doc, and you just share it with them, and they can access it any time. So, yeah, it's definitely made a difference in our building.
That's a great answer, by the way. Terrific.
Thanks.
Great job. I'll send you the little take you out to lunch for that one.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Thanks. Look at discipline for a second, and how has discipline kind of changed over the last several years, and what do you see as kind of one of our biggest challenges with discipline in the classroom for educators?
Well, I think, I don't know when this kind of turned. What I have seen just in my time as a teacher and administrator, you know, what I have seen is a change in the way we approach discipline. Not necessarily we are, you know, you look at restorative practices, you look at suspension mm-hmm. alternatives and alternatives to different types of punishment, corporal punishment, whatever we're looking at. There are ways to address those without alienating students. And I think what has happened in the past several years is a push from teachers and administrators to really take into account every child's story. And I still think that starts with a relationship with the child, because everybody is different. Every student is different. They're getting handled differently at home. And so, for example, suspending a student who's going to go home with both parents working first shift job and has no food in the house, suspending that child, what are we teaching that, and how is that remediating the behavior?
Right.
I mean, really, I've seen a focus on student-centered discipline, to where not only do they understand there's a negative consequence to their action, but whatever consequence that's given, we have to make sure it's aimed at changing that behavior. And ultimately, most of the things that we punish students for, that's a result of something else going on in their life.
And you got to have that relationship piece to find that out, don't you?
You really do. I mean, it starts, you know, we talk about a couple things, you know, in our school, and we always come back to know the students, you know, meet them where they are, and then you teach like a nut. You know, first thing, knowing those kids, you've got to know their story. You got to know more about them than their first and last name and who their parents are. You got to know what makes them tick. You know, and that's what makes that's the after hours part of a teacher's job. When you're in the daily grind of teaching, you know, you've got to be willing to invest in what are the passions of that kid? You know, do they like animals? Do they like baseball? Do they have brothers and sisters? How do their brothers and sisters treat them? You know, have they been adopted? Are they in a split home? Like, how are they being treated? And so I've seen, and I've been very encouraged at the middle school and during my time at Valley View on the amount of thought that's gone into discipline. I just feel like I remember, you know, the discipline plans when I was back in school, you know, and going back to the Marvin Kirkpatrick days at Waterville. And I just knew, you know, you got a warning, you know, you got a call home. And then no matter what you were doing, you know, I was sent up to the principal's office to get a paddling. And, you know, that didn't really take into – number one, it didn't make me stop talking. And number two, you know, depending on my home situation, that might not have been the best choice for me. So,
right.
You know, I've been encouraged to see the change in discipline practice really resulting from a relationship with the kid.
No, that's great stuff, because it's important that we understand what's going on to kind of get the whole picture of what's happening with that child. If we're not doing that, then we're not doing our jobs.
Sure.
This is something you touched on a little bit earlier, and we talked a little bit about but how has professionalism and teachers kind of changed? And I know we got into that a little bit with the teacher training and stuff when we were talking about No Child Left Behind, but just talking for a minute about professionalism of teachers.
So I guess you can say that I'm looking at the glass half full or seeing roses or whatever, but what I see in teachers.
I agree with you, but I know where you're going here.
I mean, I see an intense focus coming from these teachers. I see their willingness to dig in and go after professional development, and their willingness to, I haven't asked Dr. Cash or central office about this, but I feel like there is more pressure on teachers now to seek
Absolutely.
Advanced degrees,
mm-hmm.
To go after things like micro-credentials or additional certifications, not necessarily for the money. I mean, that's the thing. A micro-credential, you're probably not going to get paid for that, but these teachers just do it because they want to be better. And so the professionalism and the things that I've seen, you get complicated with our teacher code of ethics and the things we see, social media and some things have made it difficult and created a lot of gray area. But what I see in the professionalism side is that teachers aren't sitting back and waiting on me to come tell them what they need to work on. You know, when I talk to teachers and we talk about, hey, what are your strengths? What are you working on? What do we need to work on? How do you want to be better? You know, all of them have an answer. And all of them will say, yeah, I really need to work on my student engagement, or I really need to work on, you know, my airtime in the classroom. I really need to work on integrating technology or whatever that is. And the cool thing that I've seen is because these teachers love their job and they love the kids, they're willing to get after it.
They are.
And so there's almost an expectation of, listen, if you want to be a level 5 teacher, if you want to be that teacher that the kid remembers, then you've got to be on your game. And so I see that in our teachers and even veteran teachers who have been in it for a long time. I feel like there's just a constant hunger. You know, I love it. I love seeing teachers get fired up about their profession and going after what, you know, how they want to be better.
I've
seen a positive change.
Yeah, I'll tell you this, Corey. I think one of the most rewarding things that I saw in my year plus that I've been in this role, we had 170 teachers at our technology summit this summer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 170 teachers took a day, one of the first few days that we were out for summer break, to spend all day with us, you know, learning about technology and sharing and exchanging ideas with one another. I mean, that just shows me that these people they care and they want to succeed and they want to be able to put their students in the best possible position, and it starts with them bettering themselves.
Yeah, it really does. I've been really impressed with that as well.
This is a question, and you can kind of talk about either school, you know, at Valley View or OMS, and kind of give me, but how do you feel the morale of the school is set by you, the administration team? You know, who sets the tone for the school, and how do you kind of develop that?
Well, I think in general, the principal, you know, the principal gets a good or a bad rap, and ultimately,
You're the quarterback, aren't you? You get too much of the credit and too much of the blame.
That's right. And I feel like really it's the culture of the building is set by the teachers. Now, I'm not trying to demean the role of the principal, and it's not that I don't see my role as important, but my role is only important if I have relationships with my teachers. And so I feel like as an administrator, I do set the tone for the culture by being positive, by being upbeat, by having a vision and goals and going after those things and not shying away from difficult conversations. But really, my job, as I see it, is to take care of kids by taking care of teachers. And so, you know, my job is to support them, to let them know that I am open to listening to them, that I want their feedback, and that I think they're the smartest, most innovative people on the planet. And if I can make them feel safe and loved and important, then those teachers then are going to go out and model that same exact thing in their classroom. Because if teachers know that their job's not in danger, if they know that I've got their back, if they know that I care about them as a person, and not just as a number or just as a seventh grade math teacher or whatever that is, if they know how much I truly care about them and that I'm really willing to listen to them and that I really think they're a rock star, that's going to be a better teacher. And so I think focusing on the positives, finding positive things in our day to celebrate all the time, it's not that you don't acknowledge the things that went poorly or the things that are not doing well. But I think just constantly living in the positive and a relationship-focused building, I really think that sets the culture. And so teachers, to me, your culture is built on how you treat your teachers, because how I treat them is how they're going to feel. It's going to affect how they feel about their job and ultimately how effective they are in their instructional practice. So I do think it's set to a degree, but if I do it, I don't know if that makes sense or not.
Oh,
but my job is to support them, get out of the way, be what they need me to be, but at the same time, just stay positive.
No, you couldn't have summed that up any better. I think, and I think as a teacher, that's the kind of person I want leading the charge, is somebody that's willing to listen, that'll help me in this when I need help, will support me when I need the support, and will praise me when I've done a good job. And the flip side of that is will chastise me when it's time to pick up my game. And I think that those are all parts of creating a positive environment. And you do a great job of it.
Well, thank you. That means a lot. I appreciate it.
And answer this question very carefully, because you're talking to a central office staff member here. But what part do you feel the central office plays in the success of students within the school system and within your school?
Well, that's not too complicated. I mean, to me, you know, your role as a central office, supervisor, I feel like your job is to model the way we want teachers to treat students by the way you treat us. In the way you treat the principals and the teachers, I do feel like, you know, the neat thing about what we're doing right now is that the district has very clear goals and objectives. So when those are out there, and then it's our job as schools to line our goals and strategies and initiatives up to those goals and standards. When that happens, that models consistency in the expectations of the central office. I believe that the central office can make or break a culture, you know, by micromanaging or
absolutely
by you know, by either micromanaging or being too loose-handed on letting us do whatever we want at the school level. I do think the culture starts, every school culture starts at the very top. You know, and you see Dr. Cash, you see her focus on relationships, you see her focus on intense teaching practices in the classroom. And so once we know what her goals are and what she sees happening, and though she developed those along with the team of you guys up there at the central office, when you guys put those out there, we know that they're in the right spirit and we know what they're intended to do. And so it's easy for us to get on board. And so I think the best thing that you guys do for us is just be a resource. You all do an amazing job of that. You know, like the technology department. I mean, your techs come out, your tech coaches come out. Anytime we need them, they're there to help and be a resource. It's not that they're pushing stuff on us, but if we know we're moving to Google Classroom, well, there's support for that. And if we know we're trying to get to the 90% reading goal, you know, in third grade, well, there's support for that because they've invested in a rigorous curriculum. They've invested in the training to make it happen. And so to me, that just shows, hey, these are not unfunded or unsupported mandates. We can do it, and we'll get there as a team. And so I think that sets a collaborative environment from the very top. You know, that's how I see that central office role.
No, and the consistency piece that you talked about earlier was one of the things, you know, we've seen, and this is not a critique on anybody, but we've seen, and I'm not talking just about our administration, but we've seen ebbs and flow of what the district goals are. But to be very concise, and that's one thing I will applaud Dr. Cash for. You know, I came on board, you know, middle of last year into the central office, and the goals were stated. Well, when we talked about what we were going to do to our goals this year, we're like, we've not accomplished these goals. There's no reason to make, we're going to tweak and make some adjustments, but it's being consistent, and these are our goals. And I don't like to see as a teacher or a parent or anybody a fluctuation in what's going on. I want consistent goals. Let's achieve those, and then we'll set the next bar.
That's right.
Well, Corey, and this we'll kind of do a multi-part question here. You know, what has been your most challenging, and we'll just kind of rattle off some things, some legal issues. What are some of the things that, from an ethical standpoint, that concern you? And then financially, what are some things and areas that concern you in education?
So I've been very blessed, I guess, to not be involved in many legal battles, you know, in my education career, which is great, and knock on wood and all that stuff. I've been very blessed in that regard. But some of the legal issues that we deal with as a school really on a daily basis are issues of liability. One of the things that I've seen an increase in school practice is in keeping students safe and monitored all Amen. The time. Mm-hmm. You know, in a school like Ocoee Middle School with almost 1,250 students in the building, you know, and 120-something staff members, when you've got that many people in the square footage in our footprint, you know, it's important to keep eyes on kids all the time.
Right.
So the liability that lies on a school right now is a serious legal issue that I still think in general, schools in general, and I'm not talking about just Bradley County, but I think schools in general, I still think we walk in a lot of gray area in the way we monitor kids, whether it's on the playground, in the cafeteria, in hallways before or after school. And I think those are things we need to be very careful and cognizant of. Ethically, you know, that's one of the biggest legal things. I mean, the whole religion in schools thing
right.
has been a hot topic legally, and living where we do, and we're very blessed to have great
right.
church partners and a lot of great churches in our community. But the religion in schools thing has been obviously a hot topic legal issue, and so we have to be very careful of how those things are presented, you know, in our schools, and how our teachers and school representatives, you know, how we talk about religion and how we talk about our personal faith or whatever that is.
Right.
And so those are things that we're constantly battling legally. I think ethically, one of the biggest things, and I think the one downside sometimes to technology is that, you know, social media really makes us available all the time. And so ethically, not just for teachers, but I think for teachers and students, there's just not a whole lot out there that's totally private anymore.
Right.
And so, you know, the new teacher code of ethics, you know, outlines very specifically that you're really a teacher all the time. And so ethically, you know, we can have different beliefs or whatever that is, but we are held to a certain set of standards as a teacher. So, you know, ethically, you know, that's one of the biggest things, you know, that that concerns me on, you know, teacher behavior, student behavior outside right. of the school and how they represent us. And that's not specific to my school. That's specific. That's
to all schools. And that's, yeah. And I'll tell you, as a technology director, that's one of the things, you know, I've got a team that put together some stuff from a digital assistant standpoint. I don't know that we do a great job in schools talking about the mm-hmm. ramifications of some of that stuff. And that's something I hope to see us improve upon over the course mm-hmm. of the next few years.
Yeah. And then obviously you know, you hit on the ethical stuff, but financially, I think, you know, the greatest financial issues that I see are, you know, the move to technology, the ability to support it and sustain it in the future. I think we have to be very proactive with our county commission. And I know in other, you know, however the funding happens in other school right. districts, I know we're not just talking about the county people, but however the school districts are funded, I think we have to be very proactive in letting our legislators know the importance of funding for technology in the classroom. And so, you know, a Chromebook, you know, at $250 or $260 or $270, whatever those cost, a Chromebook for a classroom, yeah, that's a big investment, you know. And so once we start talking about replacing thousands of those, or whether it's a Promethean board or a smart board or a smart projector or whatever the pieces of technology we have in the room, financially, we don't have enough in our school budgets to make that happen. And those are conversations that you and I have all the time.
I was just getting ready to get up and shout there. So if you hear somebody praising something, yeah, I mean, that's my call. You know, we have not done and I'll say it and I'll be blunt. We've not done a great job in preparing for the future and finding a way to financially fund the things we need and want to do. And, you know, I think sometimes, especially with devices and things like that, we kind of think of them, oh, we bought this. That's a fixed asset. It's not a building. It's not a, you know, it's something that it's a consumable. It's something that's we're going to have to make plans for that being refreshed or whatever you want to call it in the mm-hmm. down the road. And I don't think we've done a great job with that. And that's one of the battles that I'm fighting. It's by far and away my biggest financial concern.
Yeah, and I guess the other financial piece that just goes a little bit even bigger than that are our buildings, you know, mm-hmm. in the school. I see the importance and I mean, you know, I'm a big sports fan
right.
too, and I know you're a big sports guy. And so, you know, there's something about teams that have a new stadium or teams that have a facility that they take pride in. And I feel like we do a great job in Bradley County of maintaining the buildings that we have. But I think thinking forward, you know, and before I retire out of the system or I'm forced out, you know, or whatever that looks like in the future, before I'm gone and out of here, you know, we're going to need to invest in some buildings mm-hmm. in our system. And so I think it's a consistent conversation about the importance of investing in schools, because our kids not only deserve top-notch teachers in a classroom, that's really where the rubber meets the road.
Right.
But they also deserve environments to where they feel safe and comfortable and not, you know, we're not worried about the environment that they're in. That's a stable thing. And that's not just a Bradley County issue.
No.
I think nationwide, you know, we have to look to invest in capital that's going to pay off years down the road. And I see high tech, high efficiency buildings being the future, of, you know, what's going to house our students in the future and where I want my kids to go to school. And so, you know, I think that's really important as well financially.
You know, that was great. That was absolutely perfect. It's spot on. I mean, I think we're very similar, and we've talked about this in the past. It's we're very similar in what our needs is going to be, and we have to start working on developing the plan to push that forward to put ourselves and put our kids and our students in the best situation to have the most success. And we have to start talking about some of those things, technology, buildings, and things like that, if we're going to be able to really kind of maximize where we're going. So you couldn't get me to agree any more than what I may retweet that here in a little bit. So if your Twitter blows up later, that's my fault.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, that's just wrote some leadership stuff. You know, what do you think you do best? What are your, you know, three best leadership qualities?
I know.
You got to talk about yourself a little bit. That's fine. You do a great job.
I can. I mean, there are things I definitely, you know, there's things I do well and things I do not so well or very poorly. I think the things that I do well, I think I'm a good communicator, you know, particularly verbally, face-to-face. I love having one-on-one conversations with teachers, with students, with anybody really who's interested in talking about school. It's just what I'm passionate about. So I think communication, I think the importance of being proactive in communication, letting teachers know what's going on, letting parents know what's going on, letting kids know what's coming. I think there's an advantage to doing that. I think that's, you know, one of the things that God has blessed me with, the ability to communicate. I think probably the second thing, and I know it sounds kind of crazy, but I really try to stay calm and stable in all situations. And so I just want teachers to know what they're going to get. You know, if you come to me and you're screaming at me, or if you come to me and you're praising me, or you're coming to me with a concern, you know, I'm going to react the same way. I just try to be calm and collected, be very thoughtful about my response, and kind of wait. I try not to make knee-jerk reactions to people if you say something to me. And so I think just that ability to have a calming effect on whether it be a faculty or a classroom of kids without just to be able to de-escalate a situation, mm-hmm. No matter what that is. It could be a tense moment about testing. There could be a fight in a room. There could be a teacher that's upset about something going on in the classroom, inside or out of the classroom. And so I think, you know, I think one of the things that I do bring to the table is just the ability to calm everything down and just say, let's slow down, you know, let's get to a solution, and it's going to be okay. I think those things are important. You know, so I'd say those are the best leadership qualities that I bring. And then I'm constant. I don't think I'm good at it, but it's one of the most important things to me is to be a good listener. I would not say it's one of my best qualities. And Lauren would agree with that. You know, she would definitely probably say that. But it's something I'm constantly working on, making, like, if you and I are talking face-to-face, working on things like eye contact and, you know, my body language, and making sure you know that at that given moment, yeah, I might be thinking about the Cubs game later, or yeah, I might be thinking about playing golf, or I might be thinking about a kid situation. But at that moment, I've got to make you think, and make you believe, and make sure you understand that you're the most important person in the room. So that's important to me. I would not say that I'm great at it. I would say that it's definitely in development for me, but I see it as important as a quality.
Well, the body language thing, that's spot on. It's something that I constantly have to remind myself, hey, you know, there's a way to present yourself. And when you are in those situations, when you're listening, you have to be able to, you know, that to whatever's going on, it's important enough for that person to come talk to you, then you've got to find a way to make time to sit down and listen to that and be responsive and receptive. And sometimes it's a struggle. It's one of my struggles too. I'm more of a talker. You start talking to me, I want to talk back to you. I don't know that it's a quality that I don't want to say lack, but it's a struggle.
Sure. Yeah. I'm the same way. I get it 100%. But it is, you know, it is important in our position to be able to do
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Sure. It absolutely is. Last question, we'll kind of wrap things up here. Thanks again so much for joining us. This will be available on the website. We'll talk about all that a little bit later. What advice would you give? You know, as you know, I'm working on my master's and doing some stuff. You know, what advice would you give somebody who is starting that journey into leadership? They've been a teacher, they've done some things, they're looking to expand their role, maybe become an administrator, an assistant principal, a principal or something. You know, what advice would you give someone beginning that journey for the first time?
Well, it's going to sound kind of cliche to say it, but I think that if you're wanting to step into leadership, you know, the greatest form of leadership is servant leadership to me. And just the ability to bloom where you're planted, not seeking out leadership opportunities, you know, necessarily for the advancement purposes or for the pay purposes, or, you know, leaders just seem to rise to the top naturally. And we see that happen in our school system all the time. You know, I just think the ability to take advantage and to fully apply your God-given gifts and abilities in whatever position you're in, I think that gives you an opportunity to move up, because I just feel like people recognize that. People recognize leadership. People recognize who respects other people. And so I think, you know, just giving 110% in whatever you're doing at the time. You know, and I've had this conversation with some aspiring administrators in and out of our district over the last couple of years. And I think just the most important thing you can do is to be a servant leader in whatever you're doing. And if you're right now, if you're a history teacher, if you're a second grade teacher, or you're a tennis coach or a baseball coach or a softball coach, whatever it is, whatever you're doing, do it for the right reasons. And you treat that job and that position, you know, like it is an entire school system, you know, and invest in the relationships, invest in the positive things about that team. And I feel like that's what sets you apart. And then going into that leadership role, you know, I just feel like it is so important. It is so important to get down, to get dirty, to be willing to do the work. Don't ask somebody to do the work that you won't do yourself. Invest in positive relationships within your building, you know, and I think if you focus on relationship building with your teachers first and empower your teachers to build relationships with kids, you know, there's really no way to have an unsuccessful building. And so really blooming where you're planted. And once you get there, find the positive things in your team and help them invest in relationships.
Corey Limber.
That's what I would say.
Very well said. As all of us have taken that plunge, or all of us, you know, the people that have, you couldn't write a better description, you know, in this business, if you're in it for the money and all those and accolades and all that stuff, you're in the wrong business. That's not what this is about. But what you said about being a servant leader, that's what leadership is to me in education.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's everything. I think every successful leader you can name, you know, in our school system and in any other school system, you're going to see that they all have a lot of the same characteristics.
Mr. Corey Limberg. Well, thank you so much for taking the time and being the inaugural guest of the BCS Tech podcast.
Honored to do it. I appreciate you having me.
It's been great. We got any cool things happening in Ocoee Middle School here in the next few weeks?
There are always great things happening at Ocoee Middle School. You know, our fall athletics have all kicked off within the last couple of weeks. And so we've got five athletic teams that are out there competing right now. Academically, we're off to a great start. You know, our enrollment's great. Our teachers are working fast and furious and really just out there supporting the kids. It's a blessing to go to work every day.
Absolutely.
It really is.
And looking forward to Labor Day weekend. There's nothing wrong
with
that.
Well, yeah, everybody's looking forward to Labor Day, including the kids. I see the exhaustion on their face, which is, as a principal, you know, it makes me happy when kids are energized, but at the same time they're exhausted, because that means, hey, we're pushing them to be better than they think they can be. So I'm thrilled to see kids tired and ready for a break. That's great.
Absolutely. Well, Corey, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
You're welcome.
Sorry, you can apologize. You can apologize to Lauren. I didn't mean to take an hour of your time, but hey, we just started talking and it just went.
Hey, buddy, it's all good. She's probably just happy. I don't have to talk to her for a few minutes. You've given her a little break.
I have given her a little bit of break. Yeah. All right. Yeah,
she'll be glad for that. All right, buddy. Appreciate it again, Scott.
Thanks for joining us.
Yes, sir.
That was Corey Lindberg of Coy Middle School, the new principal there. I couldn't tell you what a great person he is and what a great job he is. He just, it's a tremendous to see the impact he had at Valley View and the impact that he has at is having at Coy Middle. Well, that's going to do it for tonight's podcast. We're going to do these every so often. We'll have a variety of guests. We'll do some technology talk. We'll definitely get into some other areas. We'll get into leadership, and we're hopeful to have Dr. Cash on at some point in this podcast. But just an opportunity to kind of talk about education, kind of give you an inside look on what's going on. Well, that's going to do it for this week's show. Have a great evening, and we'll see you on the BCS Tech Podcast.